a reminder that if we have someone at their first, second, or third meeting, if you're called to participate, please take a moment to share what it used to be like and what you did to get sober. And with that, please give me a warm, join me in giving a warm welcome to Barbara.
Thanks, Curtis. My name's Barbara. I'm an alcoholic.
Barbara.
Glad to see everyone here. It's nice to be amongst my people on the planet Earth, amongst the Earth people, where I do not feel a part of. It's always nice to come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and feel like I'm a part of something that I identify with. Thanks for asking me to share. I tried calling my sponsor on the way here for some words of wisdom and maybe for her to inspire me on a topic, and then I remembered that I've got this big book that's shocked full of stuff, so I also asked my husband beforehand, and so I came up with something, and it's something you've all heard of, and it will be no surprise, but it's out of the big book, which is where my text comes for learning about my disease. I have alcoholism. And although I haven't drank any alcohol since August 16th, 1992, I'm still an alcoholic. The alcohol has been removed from my body, but I still have the ism, as they say. I still can feel different than apart from and not good enough. And when I feel that way, I can get very edgy and misbehave, so to speak, and in some really marvelously immature ways. It is really embarrassing where I can go to. What I have found is when I stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and what that means for me is, and it's taken me a while to get to this point, but this is what I do. I roll out of bed every morning and I hit my knees. This is what I do, by the way. Whatever you do to stay sober is your business, but this is what works for me. I'm an alcoholic. And I ask God to help me stay clean and sober. I say clean and sober because although I tried some drugs and I found them to get me high. I hate being high. That's like, talk about powerless. That's no fun. I like being right there, and that's where alcohol took me, no matter what. Sometimes I overshot the mark, and I went right there and puked on it, but I always like to be right there. But I hit my knees and I asked God to help me stay clean and sober because I've known a lot of alcoholics who have put drugs into their body and for whatever reason, their head told them that, hey, that's no big deal. And they started drinking again or the phenomenon of craving was kicked in or what have you. And then I do meditation where I sit and I breathe in and out and I try to listen. My prayer involves a lot more stuff than what I just told you, but you don't need to know about all the stuff I think the world needs to have. Blah, blah, blah. But basically the prayer is about me and fix me and help me and let me be of service. And I'll tell you, be careful what you pray for because the big kahuna's listening. And, everything that I've ever prayed for, I've gotten tenfold in Alcoholics Anonymous in such a strange, strange way. And I do meditation, and I don't do that perfectly because there's no perfect way to do it. I don't even know what perfect is. I don't even know what that looks like. I don't even know why we have that word in the English language, quite frankly. And then I have sponsees, and I have a sponsor, and I'm in contact with all those people, and they're in contact with me. And I go to meetings, and I have a home group, and I go to those meetings consistently, and I show up, and I have service positions. And if I can't do a service position consistently, then I don't take a service position because it's a commitment. You commit to doing it. Isn't that – that's marvelous. I love when people say, I'll do that, and you never see them again. It's like, what was that, you know? I don't know what that is. If you said, will you do this, and $1,000 involved each time, believe you me, bada-bing, they'd be there, I'm sure of it. So, and I do all these things not because I'm trying to be some little Saint Barbara or because when I call my mom, she's proud of the fact that, I'm sober. I do this because as an alcoholic, I can be comfortable in the world, and I'm comfortable in my own skin. And what that used to look like, the opposite of that, was a little girl that always felt like she was on the outside of everything, and I, from my my furthest back memories of childhood, I could not be comfortable in my own skin. I was paralyzed with shyness. I would throw fits if my mom would suggest that I introduce myself to another little girl on the playground or interact with kids in my class. Show and tell, I would break out in a cold sweat. And I would never brought anything. One time I brought a silver dollar and practically whittled it down to a dime, you know, because I was going to show and tell, you know, and never went up and showed my silver dollar. And then I had total shame and regret and remorse and what's wrong with me and why couldn't I be a part of and how these other kids did it with impunity and geez, you know, and I was like 5, 6 and, you know, and I just never felt comfortable ever. And, you know, I used to look at the world, and I swear, everyone else looked like they were skipping, and they were laughing, and they were comfortable, and I was right. Statistically, give or take, about 9 out of 10 people were. And, you know, about 9 out of 10 were skipping. And I was comparing how I felt inside to the earth people's outsides, as I say. And I'm not saying those people don't have a whole lot of stuff going on that isn't right with them, but they are not alcoholic. They don't have alcoholism. And I believe I was born this way. I've always felt this way. And when I was 16, right before I turned got into my teen years, my mom got rid of my alcoholic father, and that was supposed to cure our family of the chaos. And then puberty hit, and then I found alcohol. And I was at a wedding reception where there was a lot of really popular kids. This really popular kid's sister got married, I think, and all the young people were at this table, and people poured. Somehow someone got beer for us. We always manage, don't we? Always manage to get our alcohol. And it was, you know, just a beautiful, lovely, sexy, amber-colored glass of beer. And I gulped down a bunch. My mom was across the room, and I knew that was a no-no. And I knew that my dad, you know, when I hear glass, you know, chinkling, tingling, whatever the word is, in a when I hear ice in a glass, I break out in a sweat. And I'm not kidding, because that means my dad's coming around, and the shit's going to hit the fan, you know. I get anxious, because my dad's an alcoholic, and you know, one time I hid his glass in the cookie jar on top of the refrigerator, and for the rest of my young life, that man came after me when he misplaced his drink, and he misplaced it a lot, you know, and God bless him, you know. And I'll tell you what, I can find anything now. I got a homing device that won't stop because, you know, you got to stay under the radar in that environment. I put that beer in me, and the room went from being a hostile environment to a very safe environment, to an environment where I felt on the outside, to an environment where I felt part of, and where I had felt not popular enough, not pretty enough, not smart enough. All those things shifted to the opposite. Now, I didn't sit there and consciously know that that's what was happening, but what it went from was this, shoulders up, to shoulders down. And alcohol did that for me. I mean, that's what alcohol does for me. And I've been told it doesn't do that for non-alcoholics. It's not to say that it doesn't give them some comfort and maybe some social lubricant, but what it did for me is it made me feel the way all those other kids looked like they felt. And I went after that feeling for the next 12 years. And I managed to do what a lot of alcoholics manage to do. I mean, you know, I graduated high school. Some do, some don't. It's neither here nor there. It doesn't mean you are or not an alcoholic. I went to college. Graduated college. I went out into the workforce and thought I deserved better jobs than I was qualified for, and lied about jobs, you know, and kicked right into a life of becoming the first female president. And I just cracked up when it talks about that in the big book, you know. Like, normal people might aspire to that, but when they grow up, they realize that, you know, you get a job and you grow up and you pay your bills. And I was just like, no, I'm the exception. I'm the exception. And somewhere in the journey of that, in college, I met a guy who was a horrible drunk, and in comparison to him, I had no drinking problems at all. Throwing up in your hair every other weekend, you know, is not a problem when you're a blackout, daily blackout drunk. And this guy, I dated him, but, you know, he was annoying. He snored at night because he was so drunk, and he would push me out of bed, and I would end up sleeping in my beanbag, and he's sitting right there, so he can vouch for it. And, you know, and I adored this guy, but his alcoholism was as awful and destructive and heartbreaking as my dad's. And I had always made a promise to myself that I wouldn't marry. I ended up marrying this guy, but I wouldn't get involved with my dad. Freudian. You know, and anyway, he did a weird thing. He disappeared for a little while, and he came back to school, and he was sober, which to me translated as boring. And so we would like play tennis and drink big gulps and criticize people's haircuts and clothing styles and, you know, and bond and talk about what a drunk my dad was. And at 6 months of his sobriety, I graduated college and moved to California. And I stayed in touch with this young man. And you know, bear in mind, this person used to come to parties, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that when people would see him, people would leave because this was an obnoxious, horrible, disgusting drunk. And he was easy on the eyes, heavy on the heart. That's what I used to always say. And I would, over the phone, hear that this young man had, he was changing. Things were changing. And his life was starting to grow the way that a life does when it's not being destroyed by alcohol. And my life, on the other hand, with, you know, bachelor's degree and moving to sunny Southern California, was going down the tubes. And I was picking violent relationships, and I couldn't keep jobs, and I was miserable. And my finances, I was basically living paycheck to paycheck, and I was doing all these. I had a really strong value system, kind of square, you might say. And those things were slowly, incrementally breaching in to where I would have nothing left to say that I had of my value system. And basically what was happening is my soul was being completely shut off, and I was dying of what I didn't know what it was. I thought it was him, it was the job, it was, you know, what have you. And at some point, and I was in a really awful relationship with a guy who had hair longer than mine and who spent more time on his pretty face than I spent on mine, and he was just a disgusting example of what a Hollywood weirdo can turn into, and just remarkable what happens down there. Curtis knows, he lived down there, and we used to party in the same places, and you know, and I had just gotten myself into quite a pickle, and if you looked at my life from the outside, you finally would start to see it was starting to look as bad as how I felt. It was all starting to kind of align, and it's interesting how that happens. And somewhere in there, that guy from college called me, and he said, I'm going to be around the neighborhood, and, you know, let's just, you know, go do lunch. And I was like, okay, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, he, you know, he still likes me. And, you know, and for some reason, this guy, he said the first time he met me, he loved me. He had fallen in love with me, and it's kind of a funny little, you know, a true romance in many respects. I actually got an afternoon away from this predatorial, freaky, long-haired Hollywood thing that I was living with, and went down to the beach communities to hang with one of my friends. And I went to Taco Bell with my friend Chris, and on the way to the beach, he turned to me, and we talked about a lot of stuff. But the only thing I remember that day is he said, God, Barb, you know, you deserve to be happy. And in my heart, I just wasn't happy, and I didn't know what that was. And so, you know, I thought, I do. I don't know if I'd ever heard that or registered that. What does that look like? How do you do that? What? And my brain thought, and you're the one that's going to do it, you know? And so, and you know, I mean, I didn't consciously, but I was like, I love you, you know? I just was totally smitten by this guy, because what had happened is this drunk had turned into this incredible human being, because he was five and a half years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I left the long-haired hottie, and I moved back to Oregon, and what happened was this horrible environment that I had in Southern California, it was very volatile and just awful. I brought it with me because, you see, wherever there's a problem in my life, the common denominator is me. I brought me with me. And I brought some chaos into our relationship, and the cops were called and stuff like that. No big deal. That's normal. My mom has that happen all the time. You know, it's like, that's just not normal. They actually come to your door, you know. And I used to always say I jumped from a moving car, but I actually threatened to jump from the car as he was driving at about 4 miles an hour. So theatrics, you know. And one time we got in a fight, and he kind of gestured his finger toward me. I said, oh, you hit me. And I flew across the bed, you know. And for years he'd say, I didn't even touch you. I'm like, you're a liar. You're abusive, you know. And, I mean, you know, and to me, that's alcoholism. I mean, that's delusional. What is that? That's absurd. And, you know, and I get newcomers that I sponsor, and they tell me, oh, Jesus, you know, and then 2 years later, they're like, you remember that stuff I told you? All lies. It's all lies. And I understand that. But this guy, he saved my life. And what he said one night, well, when I moved here, I said, I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm just going to swear it off. That's no big deal, because you don't drink, I'm not going to drink, because drinking's not a problem for me. And, he said to me one night after a particularly volatile encounter, he actually ate the last of a giant Hershey bar that I had. I think that might have been that night. And you don't do that. with me. I'm an only child, and I'm possessive, and it's candy. And there's alcohol, and then there's candy for me, and that's how that works. And I had sworn off drinking, and I'll tell you what, you know, that's all I had. And that's, I was actually getting some relief from, you know, and when I got sober, I weighed 50 pounds less than I weigh now. I mean, I just, well, it was, you know, and that's what happens. If you don't work your program, man, I'll tell you, you're going to find a way to, you know, to survive. And he said to me at about 2:30 in the morning or something, he said, oh, my God, if you were to drink again, you know, you've sworn off drinking, bravo, you know, we're having so much fun. If you were to, you know, start, you know, drink again, what would you do? And I said, oh, I'd go down to Santa Fe and have a double shot Corval Gold with a beer back, and then I'd go down to the Mission Theater, and I'd get a, you know, a quart of dark beer, and, you know, we'd go from there. And now, mind you, I couldn't find my way to the grocery store. When we moved after living there for 8 months, I couldn't even get to the grocery store. We moved our entire apartment in paper grocery bags because I was too afraid, for one thing, to ask them if I could have boxes, because what if they didn't? How embarrassing, you know? I mean, what, you know, I just was paralyzed. And he said, well, what would your mom do? And I said, my mom, she'd probably order some funky little sweet drink and sip on it. And, you know, my mom's not an alcoholic. And when she puts alcohol in her, it makes her kind of sleepy. She says, it makes her kind of sleepy, so I just don't drink it. You know, and I'm like, I don't even know what that is. I can't fathom. When you put alcohol in me, the game is on. I actually feel exhilarated. I actually feel like I'm invigorated. It just feeds my soul. It fills every single nook and cranny. It is the God hole filled. It doesn't stay that way, and a bunch of other crap comes in, but it gets it done. And he said, what would your dad do? And my dad says that he's an alcoholic, and so, you know, and I said, oh, my dad, well, if he swore off drinking, he'd probably go down to Santa Fe and have a double shot Corval Gold and then head to the Mission Theater and, you know, whatever. And I stopped short, and I looked at Chris, and I said, oh my God, am I an alcoholic? And it had never, ever occurred to me. Everyone in my family's dead from this disease. Everyone's lost their professions. Everyone's lost their marriages. Everyone has lost their soul. Everyone's lost their homes. Everyone has lost everything from this disease. And I didn't understand that that involved alcohol and alcoholism. And he said, I can't tell you that. It's a self-diagnosed disease. So I you know, I called up the hotline, and they said, what would you like to do? Very old man. And I said, I would like to drink. And he said, I'll tell you what, why don't you go to a meeting tomorrow of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I went to my first meeting, and I sat in those rooms, and you people, you alcoholics, welcomed me, and you recognized me as one of your own. And I had never felt so at home in my entire life. In a nutshell, I haven't done this program perfectly. I have done the steps. I continue to do the steps. I fought with having a sponsor, and that was not a good idea. But I didn't fight meetings. I've always loved the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am completely in love with my recovery. This is the best life I could ever imagine having. I don't understand how a girl like me can get from, you know, living next to the Hollywood Bowl in Hollywood, California, completely and utterly bankrupt spiritually, emotionally, physically, in every possible way, and how she can stand here today and really feel like today when it was sunny, just to breathe it in and to look around. And I honestly breathe in my life. I consume my life every moment, and I can't believe this is me. I can't believe it. You know, in my recovery, I have had and still have a husband. We'll celebrate 13 years of marriage next month. I have two dogs, which is just remarkable. I was the kind of person that just ignored animals or was so afraid of dogs that if I heard one in the distance, I'd start to panic and weep because I was, they're coming after me. I just, no real reason, just, you know, I'm the center of the universe and they're coming after me. You know, just delusional things. And by the way, that was on my inventory, fear of dogs. And I worked the steps around it, and I own two beautiful dogs. One of them's tattooed on my back, and that is amazing, permanently, till I die. And, you know, I have walked through tons of health problems. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis 2 months ago, and I've been very sick for 3.5 years. And, you know, I'm relieved to know what's wrong with me. It's not going to kill me. You're not going to get rid of me that easily. Sorry, those of you that don't like me. I'm staying. And, you know, the bottom line is that you don't have to drink through any of it, ever. There is absolutely no excuse, none. Zip, I've tried them all. There's no reason to drink. If you found these rooms, you are a big fat miracle. You are an incredible miracle. And to dick around with this is asinine. It is totally refundable out there. It's a nightmare. And I've sponsored several gals that have gone back out just to put their toe in the water, just to see, is it maybe warm? And they are miserable. I mean, I don't know. I went to the psych ward and she tried to kill herself. I don't know. Is that miserable? You know, I don't know. To me, that's miserable. I think that's, you know, saying maybe it doesn't work out there anymore. Is it miserable to lose your children? I'm not sure. I think it is. You know, I'm not sure. Or to go through divorce. Someone before the meeting tonight, Mark, said, you know, I don't want to try it out there anymore. I don't want to have to try to get my life back again. Everything that I have that is amazing, I got through Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything. You know, and if you don't know what that is, stick around, because there's people nodding and they do know. So it didn't just happen for me. I'd like the topic tonight to be, and those of you that know me will giggle, identification, because I'm all about identification, because the fact is that I was a little long-haired, brown-eyed alien out there, and it almost killed me. And when I came in here, you guys just looked right at me and said, oh, sweetheart, please. I didn't just do that. I did that 5 times with peanut butter on my ass and a hat on my head that stuck up to the hell. You did it. You know, you guys were like, you're not unique. You're not unique at all, you know? And I was like, okay, too much information, but thank you. But what I love, you know, the big book sums it all up, so I'll quit yabbering in my funky tongue and read it directly from the text. It says, we are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passenger, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which bonds us. And then it goes on to say in this same chapter, and God, I just love this. It says, but the ex-problem drinker who has found the solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. I mean, can you believe that? I don't know about you guys, but nobody. There was church people that were trying, and therapists and school counselors, and my mommy and my daddy and my friends, and you name it. They were trying to communicate with me, and I couldn't hear it. I couldn't hear it. You guys say, oh, you know what, Barb? I totally understand that. And I'm like, I'm no longer unique. And it says in here, until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. It says that the man who is making the approach has had the same difficulty, that he obviously knows what he is talking about, that his whole deportment shouts at the new prospect that he is a man with a real answer, that he has no attitude of holier than thou. And I swear that saved my life in here, because you guys aren't righteous and you're not pushing any kind of religion, nothing down my throat. Do you want sobriety? Yes, I do. Do you want to know how to do it? Yes, I do. Follow me. Follow you. Yeah, this is how I suggest it. Follow you. You're not going to push me ahead of you, poke and prod me, you know, demean me, punish me, tell me what to do. No. If you want it, follow me. If you don't, someone else will, you know. It says, nothing whatever except the sincere desire to be helpful, that there are no fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. These are the conditions we have found most effective. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. And for me, that meant that the sunlight of the Spirit found my black little tiny raisin of a soul, and she grew. She grew back. Now, that is refundable. Your soul doesn't disappear. Just gets blocked off from the light. And lastly, and then I'll shut up, it says, talks about a man in here, and it says, two of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous came to see me. They grinned, which I didn't like too much, and then asked me if I thought myself alcoholic and if I were really licked this time. I had to concede both propositions. They piled on me heaps of evidence to the effect that an alcoholic mentality, such as I had exhibited, was a hopeless condition. They cited cases out of their own experience by the dozen. It says, this process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job myself. Identification. You know, I understand that we have ANDA. I did ANDA. I got all sorts of stuff. I could come in here and say, I'm Barbara, I'm an alcoholic, and I have MS, and you need to hear about MS. Is there one person in here that gives a rat's ass about MS, saving their life? Maybe one of you, and we'll talk later. But that is not appropriate right now. Alcoholism. You probably showed up tonight because this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And we talk about alcoholism here. And I understand that we have other stuff. But I'm not going to come in here and hope that there's an off chance that one person will identify with MS. when I know everyone in here is going to identify with alcoholism. And that's my responsibility as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there are other organizations and other 12-step groups that identify and address the other stuff. And that's phenomenal. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, we do alcoholism. So let's rock. Let's stay sober. Thanks for letting me be of service.